Reporting on the games you love by people who love to game. The MMO Reporter Network.
Hello and welcome to episode 30 of the Happy Hearthstone Podcast, the longest running Hearthstone podcast in the history of time and space and cards. I'm your host, Josh Augustine, and this week I'm joined by Jin.
Hello.
Hello, and I'm trying not to picture you as a scary monster, because I was watching Supernatural with my wife yesterday, and the evil monster they were hunting was the Djinn, which had mystical powers and sweet tattoos, but also liked eating people.
Well, so if it makes it any easier for you, it's actually pronounced Jean.
Oh, that does. Now I'll just try and not picture you as my mother, whose middle name is Jean.
Well, that may be more intimidating depending on your family.
But I'm sure you know more about Hearthstone than my mom does. Or at least I hope so. Or else this show is going to be very awkward.
Or maybe your mother is secretly legendary.
That's true. I hope she is. Maybe she'll let me use that card back that she gets at the end of the season this month.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Alright, so Jean. So I'm just going to call you Jean. Is that good?
Yes.
Alright, Jean. So, you're here. You've been a long-time listener to the show. You also hosted the tournament that got Redbeard onto the show, where he could dominate on last episode. Can you just tell people a bit about kind of who you are, your history with card games and Hearthstone?
Well, I am, or originally was, a very heavy Magic the Gathering player. I got into Magic the Gathering in 1996. I was 5 years old at the time, and I loved the game. And I kind of dropped out of the game as I got older, got into, like, Yu-Gi-Oh! And all those other cards, and along the lines realized, these are just really bad Magic the Gathering. So I got back into Magic the Gathering and got really big into Draft and the Legacy format. Because I had the old cards, and
from your fifth birthday, yes.
Yeah. And in Hearthstone, I played pretty early in the second season of the beta. I didn't get into the first season, but I played a lot of aggro Murloc Warlock and Miracle Rogue and Unleash the Hounds Hunter on the first change. I forget exactly what that one did, but
that was the one that gave all your creatures plus one attack and charge, right?
No, that was the original iteration of the card. The change, I forget what the first...
Oh, it was the same effect, but it's two mana more.
Yeah, that's right. On the three mana, get hounds, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's when I first started playing Unleash the Hounds Hunter, and it wasn't as good a deck then, but it got a lot better.
Yeah, yeah, they made a lot of nice buffs that helped that deck carry along. So is it safe to say that you're an aggro man? Like, it seems like that is your style.
It's actually really sad because, actually, I've gotten back into aggro. I started playing, I saw Reynad's Zoo deck, and I was like, hey, this looks kind of cool. And so I basically built my own Zoo deck, and I started with a really old shell and kind of built my own way. And apparently I've come into basically the same thing that Reynad has. I'm not entirely sure if he's still running some of the cards I am, but... I like it. And
okay. Yeah.
Before that, I was doing Control Priest a lot.
Control Priest, that is my guilty pleasure. Even though it's not, like, amazing, I just love playing it so much all the time.
I also have a Miracle Mage deck that is kind of like secret tech, but I have to wait till I get to a higher rank to unleash it.
Okay, so we'll have to have you back on for a deck battle so we can try and do Miracle Mage.
Oh, I would love that.
That is intriguing for sure. All right, so let's talk about why we're happy. I'm going first. I got my new Fireside Friends card backs today. I'm super excited. We had three guys at work that, you know, all play Hearthstone. And so we decided at our lunchtime, we were going to, you know, all log on to the network and play, because all you have to do is have three people logged on to the same network into Hearthstone. And then you just play three games. And so we found out, because we decided to try and game the system, right? You can surrender a match before it even begins. which I've never tried to do before because there's really no reason to. But here, if you set up, okay, let's duel, you set up the duel, and during the part where it's like turning over chairs, da-da-da, like the little status bar, if you go into the options menu, you can actually surrender immediately. And we did that, and we did it, you know, in the right order, so everyone got three games in. It took us like 5 minutes, and we all had our new card backs. So if you're looking to just get the card backs on the cheap, that is the way to do it. Although it would be cool to go to one of the events, obviously, but not everyone can do that. If you can't do that, this is the way to get those backs. So how about you, Gene? Oh, why are you happy?
Before I tell you why I'm happy, I'm going to tell you that I'm mad jealous that you got that, because not very many of my friends live near me, and I only have a desktop. I don't own a laptop, so I'm not entirely sure if I can go to a Fireside Friends event to get the card back.
I bet you Hearthstone people seem friendly, right? I bet you could find someone to let you at least log in there for a few minutes. Like, use their laptop or use their iPad or something.
Yeah, that's potentially true. I may have to look into finding a Fireside Friends thing near me.
Yeah. If you get super desperate, you borrow someone's laptop and you just start trolling Starbucks, right? Because people are logged onto the network there. You think Hearthstone is popular enough. There has to be at least one Starbucks somewhere that has two Hearthstone players logged in. Then you just kind of sneak on.
Actually, a friend of mine suggested making Battle.net accounts and then just dual clienting Hearthstone.
Okay, that seems like it would work. Yeah, and hey, you'll get the card backs, but you will feel a little sad, I think, sitting there with all three clients forfeiting games over and over.
Yeah, probably. Okay, so why I'm happy. I know your last guest said this, but I am happy to finally have gotten my way onto the show. I'm also very happy to have hit rank 10 today. And I
Nice, congrats!
And thirdly, I am happy that that tournament went as smoothly as it did, as I had like all of like 3 or 4 days to actually get in contact with everyone and have it all set up, and then like 4 more days to get all the stuff done. So the fact that like everyone was so enthusiastic and like ready to communicate with me made everything run so smoothly, and other than one small complication, the tournament went off without a hitch.
Yeah, I'm happy about that too, because that sometimes, I mean, those tournaments that are just kind of makeshift are real hit or miss. So I'm really glad that that worked out well this time.
Yeah, I've done tournament organizer work for Magic the Gathering tournaments at my college when I went, and we had some real hit or miss tournaments in the past. So like the fact that this is my first one with the Happy Hearthstone and it was just perfect was amazing.
That means all of them are going to be perfect, Gene. You should just do one every single week and nothing will ever go wrong.
I actually considered trying to run, I know this is off the cuff, but I wanted to run past you at some point, potentially doing a weekly King of the Hill.
Oh, interesting. That's intriguing. Yeah, we should talk about that. See, if you guys are listening and will be interested in that sort of thing, because that's the big thing to me, is just how much interest is there? How many people would do it? If you guys would do that weekly, you know, let us know. You can hit us up on Twitter, email, all that stuff will be at the end of the show, obviously. Or just post it on GameDiplomat.com. If there is enough interest, that would be awesome to start putting that together. Cool. All right, but let's talk about what we're talking about this week, which is free decks. Nope, we're not giving you cards, but Blizzard already gave you a ton of cards. We're just helping you figure out the best decks you can make with those cards. So we've done this before with Priests and Druids, basically just building the best decks you can build just with the free cards they give you, plus the first few upgrade options. So it's designed to help new players, you know, be competitive. And so this episode, though, we're doing Rogues and Warlocks, which I'm super excited about, Gene, because it sounds like you have extensive experience with both of these classes.
Oh, I have been in love with both of these classes for as long as I've been in Hearthstone, so this is pretty exciting for me as well.
Awesome. So I'm excited. So just some kind of basic background information for people that maybe are deck building for the first time. If you go into My Collections, on your front page of Hearthstone, you can open up the deck builder. You can build decks there. If you hit all sets, that's a little button there, you can select basic set. And basic sets are the free cards that everybody gets. So if you want to try building a free deck or making some suggested tweaks, if you don't like our decks perfectly and you want to change it out, basic cards are the ones that everyone gets for free. That's who you want to work with.
I just want you to know that until you mentioned it on the show, I had no idea I could do that.
You filter between the different sets?
Yeah, I've been in here since beta season 2, and I never paid any attention to the all sets marker and that it would let me filter.
All right, there we go. We're sharing knowledge here. I know. See, I have the promo set. Like, that's one of the buttons that has, you know, Elite Torn Chieftain and Gelban Mechatork for me. Reward set. It's still the one that's empty for me, and I don't know exactly what that is, but I need a card in there.
In order to get the reward set, what you need is, I think it's one copy or a full set of every Murloc gives you Old Murkai. And if you get every pirate, that includes Captain Greenskin, then you get a playset or two of Captain's Parrot, which is 1/1 for two that puts a random pirate from your deck into your hand.
Oh, that's awesome. I had heard about those cards, but I didn't put together that that's the reward set. I thought it was like maybe something for future legendary players, but okay. All right,
yeah,
so
no,
now
I
have a goal.
I have both of those.
Nice. Well done. See, I share some knowledge with you. You share some with me. We're both getting slightly better at this game.
Excellent Air 5.
Excellent Air 5. All right. So let's jump into the first deck. We're going to do Warlock. Gene, you put this together, so I'll let you take over from here.
Okay. So I'm going to start with the disclaimer that this may not be the actual best free Warlock deck. But the basic strategy is to Zerg or rush very hard very early because you don't have a lot of late game in the deck, and so you basically want to beat them probably around like turn 6, because then you're killing them before they have access to a lot of the cards that are going to shut you down, like Flamestrike. And you're playing a lot of like low cost cards, because then you can life tap, and then when you life tap you get the extra, or you get the double top deck power, where if they're also in top deck mode you're getting twice as many cards. Card advantage is value. Value wins you games.
Yeah. And the reason I like this, and even if it, you know, it isn't the best Warlock deck you could build with free, I like it because the Warlock loves to rush. Even the best deck of Warlocks is the rush deck. So I like that this deck is kind of building you towards something greater. I like that a lot.
Yeah, what I've gone with here is first, because on Threshold, your other podcast, people ask you to explain magic terms all the time. Zoo actually originates in Magic the Gathering as a creature-based deck. And the idea is, as one of your other co-hosts has explained in the past, that creatures that have really good abilities and act as spells are basically two for ones. And so that's what you want to try and do in a Zoo deck. And we didn't have enough free cards to build a real Zoo deck, so we kind of mixed and matched with the Murloc deck where we could.
Yeah. And the theme of the Murloc deck is just kind of like Murlocs in WoW, right? They're all super weak, but they swarm in large numbers.
I wish I knew that. I love the Warcraft series. Never got into World of Warcraft.
Oh, well, boom. I'll share the WoW knowledge. You share the card knowledge.
Okay, so the first card in the deck is Soulfire, which is a really, like, hard to see the value in card. It is zero cost, which is amazing, but on the same hand it makes you discard a card at random, which a lot of people will see as a downside. But what a lot of people don't understand, and actually a friend of mine when I first started playing swore up and down that it was a bug, card text always happens in the order that it's written. And so the zero cost is the first thing written, deal 4 damage. So you deal 4 damage and then you discard a card. And so if your hand is empty, it's actually just a free spell that does 4 damage.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So that makes sense. But so would you recommend then for new players listening, should they only cast this when they have an empty hand, or they should sometimes gamble? Like, sometimes you just need to deal 4 damage, right?
Sometimes you absolutely just need to deal 4 damage, and actually in the deck, the zoo deck that I'm running 2 Doom Guards as well, and you have no idea how many times I've had Doom Guard Soulfire in my hand.
And yeah, like... Doom Guard, for those that don't know, makes you discard 2 random cards.
Sometimes you just have to understand that sometimes losing that other card is worth doing the 4 damage, and there's actually a large majority of times where dealing that 4 damage is worth losing that one card.
Yeah, and especially, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, but in this deck, there's a lot of cards that aren't, like, hyper-powerful, right? It's not, like... It's very rare that, you know, a Murloc Raider is going to win you the game. So if you discard that, it's not a huge deal.
Yeah, well, most of the time you're either going to be able to empty your hand, or you can Soulfire an empty hand and then draw cards. And there's just not very many times when Soulfiring isn't the right option. Yeah. Because... You're absolutely correct. If you happen to lose a Murloc Raider or a Bluegill Warrior or an Iron Fur Grizzly, then so what? The idea is that your board should be pretty full in the first place, so you're not dropping these creatures at this time.
Yeah. Cool. All right, what else you got in this deck?
Okay, so like I said, we're mixing Murlocs in here. So we have the Murloc Raider, 1/2 for 1, passes the vanilla test, which is really good because it's vanilla.
Yeah.
It's really just there as like a placeholder, but at the same time, turn 1 you drop that, and turn 2 they're using their hero ability to kill it. A lot of time turns out to be a win for you because they're not using their turn 1 efficiently. They're killing a 2/1 that you really don't care about. And if they happen to let it through, then there's a lot of times where a 2/1 trades with like a 3/2, at which point you're getting amazing value.
Yeah.
And then we have the Voidwalker, the 1/3 for 4 with taunt, which this card is borderline overpowered.
Yeah, the bane of aggro decks everywhere.
I'm not entirely sure how many new players are going to be familiar with the vanilla test. Vanilla test should be health and attack is equal to twice your mana, or your mana cost times 2. And so he's actually your mana cost times 4, and he gets an ability. Makes this card amazing. And a lot of aggro decks, like the Hunter with Unleash the Hounds, getting a bunch of 1/1s, are going to bash their heads into this guy all day and just lose dudes.
Yeah, there's so many games where, like, they'll drop this down, and I'll have something in my hand, like a Leper Gnome or something like that, and it's just like, oh, it just kills your momentum. It's like, do I even play this? He's just going to kill it. Should I wait till later?
Yeah, there are so many 2/1s in this game that the Voidwalker's ability to almost always 2/1 or eat a Frostbolt from a mage or eat a Soulfire from a... enemy warlock does so much for your tempo and you winning the game.
Yeah, so this card stood out to me in your deck list because it's really the only defensive card on the list. There's also, I guess, the Iron Fur Grizzly, who's kind of defensive. So this is here just to make sure that if you run into a similar aggro deck like a Hunter or a Warlock, this kind of gives you the advantage there. Is that the idea?
Yeah, basically. Like, if you drop this on turn 1, which a large majority of the cases you're trying to do, then... they look at their hand and say, oh crap, my turn 1 play just became a really bad play.
Yeah. Okay, awesome.
So next we have Acidic Swamp Ooze. There are a lot of weapons in this game altogether. There are a lot of warriors running around right now. Hunters rely heavily on Eagle Horn Bow. And so Acidic Swamp Ooze, I think, is a 2 of in every deck. There are a lot of decks that aren't running 2 of it, but I think it should be because Battlecry, destroy your opponent's weapon, and it's a 3/2 for 2. It kills your opponent's light or true silver champion. I've actually used it to kill gore hells before.
Aw, that makes me sad on the inside.
But yeah, no, it's just an amazing card that does amazing things.
Yeah, it's interesting to point out. So if you're listening to this show, you're using a free deck, maybe you're a new player, and you don't really like swapping cards, like, this is one of the cards that you have to swap out. Because a lot of cards put in Bloodfen Raptor, like even mages, their decks use Bloodfen Raptors, which is the exact same card, but worse, because it doesn't have the battle cry. This is the sort of thing, like, even if you're not a big deck tweaker, you definitely need to slot this guy in.
Yeah, definitely. Next card we have is Bluegill Warrior, 2-1 charge. His idea is, when you're playing him, is the use the charge to basically use him as a 2-cost removal spell, or potentially drop it and hit face, and then they have to waste their time removing it on their turn. Or, you know, maybe you get to hit them in the face, and then they play something that he gets to kill. It kind of shuts your opponent's momentum down, again, because your opponent has this 2-drop in their hand, like, say, Knife Juggler, and that's all they can drop. Well, now they don't want to drop their Knife Juggler, because it just dies to the Bluegill Warrior.
Yeah, it's the element of surprise is super valuable, too, because, say, they were playing before you, and they dropped their Knife Juggler. And Knife Juggler can get out of control if you don't have a way to take care of it. And this guy's just like, nope, get rid of it immediately.
Yep. And so next we have the Murloc Tidehunter, which is here partially as a space filler, but also because his battle cry giving you a 2-1, or he's a 2-1, and then he also gives you a 1-1. I'm actually using him and the Dragonling mechanic in this deck, mainly because they drop an additional dude, and a lot of this deck's idea is to fill your board with guys so that your opponent has to answer a whole bunch of things at once instead of, I drop one creature every turn, and my opponent has an answer to it every turn, and now I'm now I'm in a rut.
Yeah. Yeah, this guy is really good. I like him a lot. You will be sad occasionally when you play like a mage and they just use their hero power and kill it or whatever, but hey, you still get the 1-1 out of it.
Well, yeah,
so that's
I actually really like him against mages, because a lot of times I'll drop him on turn 2. And then on their turn 2 or their turn 3, they don't do anything, basically, because they Fire Blast my Murloc Tidehunter, and then I've got other things on the board where all they did that turn was kill the Tidehunter. And then the turn after that, maybe they have a play, maybe they just Fire Blast my Murloc Tidehunter again, and then I get 2 free turns where I get to do whatever I want, and they're just Fire Blasting 1 health dudes.
Yeah, that's true. I like it.
Next we have Novice Engineer, another really good card. Used to have 2 attack at one point, if I remember correctly.
It was 2 health.
Was it 2 health? Okay.
Yeah, it was a 1-2.
But yeah, the battle cry of draw a card, again, really synergizes with this deck because you want to have as many cards in your hand, or actually as few cards in your hand as possible, but as many cards as possible on your board. Mm-hmm. And so, 2 mana draw a card, potentially you hit one of your 1-drops and then you draw and then you play that or any of your other really low costing cards, play another guy.
Yeah. This is one of these cards that just goes in pretty much every free deck because it's just great value.
And a lot of non free decks too.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm curious what you think. I've actually seen fewer Novice Engineers and fewer Loot Hoarders recently. Is this a change, or am I just, you know, seeing things?
Oh God. I've actually seen a lot of decks changing out the Novice Engineers for the Gnomish Inventors. Mm-hmm. And the big reason for that is because the meta is slowly shifting into mid-range. There's kind of I've found this true in Magic. I don't know if it will be true in Hearthstone, but there's kind of a cycle of metas. Mm-hmm. there's aggro, and then aggro gets beat by mid-range, and then mid-range gets beat by control, and control gets beat by aggro. And so,
yep.
And so since aggro has been dominant for so long, a lot of people are putting in the Gnomish Inventors so that they can Defender of Argus and get a 3-5, and now your aggro deck does nothing.
Yeah, 3-5 with taunt. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she replaces... So the Gnomish Inventor, just to remind people, is a 4-mana cost, 2/4, with Battlecry, draw a card. Which is, yeah, that's crazy good for mid-range.
Yeah. The next card in the deck is Iron for a Grizzly, which actually speaks more to the mid-range player. The mid-range player is going to have more dudes with 3 or greater health than... who your Voidwalker isn't going to do as much against. And so your Iron for a Grizzly is just your 3-drop Voidwalker, basically.
Yep.
Nice. Then we have Shattered Sun Cleric. Shattered Sun Cleric battle 3/2 for 3 that gives a battle cry, gives friendly minion +1/+1. And her whole purpose here is when one of your dudes does stick, then you get to buff up that dude and make him go in.
Okay, so is this... Because I'm curious also why... So you mentioned you're going to have the Dragonlee mechanic. You have the Razorfen Hunter. You have the Tide Caller.
Mm-hmm.
Tide Hunter. Yeah. Is the idea there that you're trying to get these tokens so stuff like Shattered Sun Cleric can land? Or is it just to spread out your damage so they can't kill it all?
Yeah, the reason why I have so much token generation in the deck is because a lot of the removal that you're going to see more often is single target.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, there's... no one's playing Arcane Explosion. Like people are playing like Flame Strike and Swipe and stuff like that. That's really only gonna hit one, or Flame Strike hits everyone, but like Swipe hits one target and then maybe hits some other targets. And so basically, the token generation there is there to make it so that your opponent has to figure out where to, in theory, waste their single target removal.
Mm-hmm.
And so you play the Razorfen Hunter, they kill your 3/2, but you get to keep the 1/1. Now Shattered Sun gets to give you a 2/2. Or
yeah.
Maybe they kill the 1/1 and you have the 3/2, or the 2/3, now you have a 3/4. It's really just there because eventually someone sticks. And
yeah. And I mean, you also have Raid Leader here, right? That kind of plays into the same theory.
Yeah, I just realized I did just skip over that card, didn't I?
That's all right. We're working it in right now.
Okay, so yeah, Raid Leader is the 3-drop 2/2 that gives all of your other minions +1 attack. And so in theory, you have 6 dudes on the board. And so you drop the Raid Leader, and that's... Basically, at that point, Raid Leader reads, pay 3 mana, do 6 damage to your opponent.
Yeah.
And
he stays, too.
And he stays around. Or
yeah.
Potentially, they have a Frostwolf Grunt, which is a card that I'm seeing a lot more of. And the Frostwolf Grunt is the 2/2 taunt for 2. And so now your... Murloc Scout trades with their 2/2, and that's something you got for free, and then you have other cards you can play.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the whole, like, Raid Leader is actually a really integral card here. I actually considered having a Stormwind Champion, which is the 7-drop equivalent that also gives them +1 health, but it's just way too slow in this deck.
Yeah. Yeah, by the time you'd be dropping that, you're hoping the game's already over.
Yes.
Cool. All right, so what other cards you got?
So let's see. We're on Raid Leader. We kind of covered Razorfen Hunter, and Shattered Sun Cleric we did. So now we're on Chilwind Yeti. Chilwind Yeti is irrefutably the best 4-drop maybe vanilla in this game.
Yeah. I would agree, vanilla. There's probably some legendaries out there that might argue the...
And so it's a 4-5 for 4, which is really nice because that five health on it means that the majority of their cards are going to leave your Chill 1 Yeti with 1 health.
Yep.
And so you play Chill 1 Yeti, they Flame Strike, they still have to do something about your Chill 1 Yeti. Or you play Chill 1 Yeti and you trade it into one of their guys, and you still have a Chill 1 Yeti sitting there.
Yeah, he's another one of those cards, along with, we kind of mentioned with Novice Engineer, that I think is just like, it goes in every free deck. It's just a great minion for anything.
And I completely agree. I actually watched a YouTube video recently where a guy played Chill 1 Yeti on turn 1.
What? Druid deck?
Yeah, Druid double innervate into Chill 1 Yeti, and he wins the game because he got a Chill 1 Yeti down on turn 1, and his opponent just couldn't respond to a turn 1 Chill 1 Yeti.
Yeah. Wow. That's really funny. Yeah, Innervate is always one of those interesting cards where it gives you 2 mana crystals just for that turn, where it's like, it seems like for every time that one of those moments happens, I like top deck it, you know, late game, and it's just like, oh, why is this card in my deck? I just lost.
Yeah, it is unfortunately one of those cards. And then we kind of covered Draggling Mechanic. We'll just go over what it does. It's a 2-4 for 4 that also gives you a 2-1. Mechanical Draggingling token, and again, its place there is to fill up your board and potentially give you a Shattered Sun target, and it's actually fairly efficient in most cases. There are very few cases that I've run into where having a 2-4 and a 2-1 at the same time in your turn doesn't help you immensely.
Yeah, that 4 health just makes it super resilient, too.
And then we have the Shenjin Shield Master.
I like you. You tried to say it with the troll accent there at the end. I like that.
And this is probably my favorite taunt creature in the game. Because with the 3 damage, it trades for a lot of the 3 or less health cards that you're going to be running into, and then with the 5 health, it sticks around for a while. There are an immense number of 2/3s in this game, and so it trades with 3 2/3s for the low cost of 4 mana. I think it has a place in most free decks, if not all.
Yeah, I would agree.
And then, last but not least, the Boulder Fist Ogre.
Yeah, it's like the uncle to the Chill 1 Yeti.
Yes, the Boulder Fist Ogre, there's a professional Hearthstone player called Trump. Trump is a former professional StarCraft player, and he does a... Sorry to give someone else's show hype on your show.
No, by all means.
But he does a show called Value Town, where they speak about Hearthstone, and he has been quoted numerous times saying that if you don't have a Ragnaros the Fire Lord, play Boulder Fist Ogre in its slot. Because Boulder Fist Ogre does the exact same job Ragnaros does, where they absolutely have to respond to this card. If they don't respond to this card, he gets out of control really fast.
Yeah. And I am loving... So I've been playing this game for a while, obviously, and I've been looking at cards for a while. I just now saw the flavor text on this card, which is hilarious. It's in all caps locks, and it just is... Me have good stats for the cost.
Yes.
And he knows exactly what he is.
It's also very true.
Yeah. Awesome. So I like the deck. Very aggressive with a few kind of late game kind of just safeties like Senjin Shield Master and Boulder Fist Ogre in case it goes longer than you expected.
Yeah, really I just didn't want to fizzle once turn 6 happened.
Yeah. Cool. So, all right. So we also want to talk about You know, obviously, this is the deck you want to build, but people are going to be crafting, right, as they're getting new dust and they're getting new cards. What are the first few upgrades that you would recommend someone do to this deck?
Okay, so enjoying this deck then and wanting to upgrade this deck and craft new things. Currently, we have a mix of Murloc and Zoo, and Murloc has been falling out of favor. I've actually only seen one Murloc deck this entire season. And wow. Zoo is getting really big. Well, Zoo has gotten really big. So I want to try and dissect out the Murloc cards as much as possible and kind of transition over to more of a Zoo deck. And so first card we have is Argent Squire, 1-1 for 1 with Divine Shield. This card is a huge tempo play. It replaces your Murloc Raider, which is a loss of one power, but with Divine Shield, a lot of times your opponent can't answer it with their hero ability, and it does still trade for a lot of early game cards. So a lot of times turn one, someone will Fire Blast it, and that's their turn one. And then turn two, they Fire Blast it again. And now you've gotten two free turns, just like some of the other cards in this deck. But Argent Squire is that little one drop that can.
I like that description of it.
Next, we have the Direwolf Alpha, which is going to replace your Raid Leader. It's a... It's a 2-2 for 2 that only gives the adjacent minions plus 1 attack instead of all of them. And you're basically sacrificing the all card decks for adjacent in exchange to have him go off a turn earlier. And this is generally really helpful because it allows you to trade your guys into their guys a little more efficiently and makes you actually think about where you place cards, which is a very important habit to get into in Hearthstone.
That is very true. Yeah, especially, I mean, ideal world, but you're dropping Argent Squire turn one, drop this guy down turn two, suddenly you have a 2-1 with Divine Shield, which is a lot more dangerous.
Most certainly. Where if you have the Raid Leaders in, then you drop the 1-1 on turn one. And then if you have coin, maybe you get Raid Leader, but that doesn't really seem like an efficient way to use your coin.
Yeah.
The next card we have is Abusive Sergeant, which is a 2-1 for 1 that says give target minion plus 1 or plus 2 attack for this turn. And that replaces your Murloc Tidehunter, which kind of removes some of the token generation. But in exchange, your Voidwalker is now a 3-3 for the turn, takes out something big, or your Argent Squire turns into a... What is that card name? Oh, no.
Oh, the Scarlet Crusader.
Scarlet Crusader, there we are. So you drop Abusive Sergeant, and your 1-1 Argent Squire becomes a 3-1 Scarlet Crusader for the turn, which is a really good play to make on people.
Yeah. Now, the thing I love about your first three upgrades here is that they're all common cards, which means they only cost 40 dust to craft, which means these are going to be really easy to get. I love that.
Oh, actually, the version of Zoo that I'm currently running, I did the math, and I'm at 2,500 total dust for the entire deck.
Wow. Yeah, that's good, because a lot of those cards are, you know, starter cards and that sort of stuff.
Yep. Next up, we... do unfortunately have a rare Doomguard.
But he's worth it.
But he is definitely worth it. He's a 5/7 charge for 5 mana that says discard 2 random cards in your hand. And just like Soulfire, there are a lot of times where you get to play him on an empty hand and he's just a 5/7 charge for 5. And that is ridiculous tempo. And like... If at any time you saw a card that said 5/7 charge for 5 and it didn't have that second text on there, that card would be considered OP and probably be immediately changed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's no way. Yeah, and a lot of times, I mean, with this deck, if your game is going well, by the time you're playing this guy, you don't care if you have to discard two random cards, because you're probably going to kill him this turn with this extra five damage.
Yeah, that, and a lot of times, by turn five, if you're not top decking Doomguard, then you drew too many late game cards.
Yeah.
Oh,
nice.
Next up, we have the Knife Juggler, which, again, I believe is rare.
Yeah, he is.
And,
but also worth it.
Yes. And he replaces your Bluegill Warrior. So he takes out the 2-1 removal spell. But in exchange, he becomes a theoretically infinite removal spell, assuming RNGesus be with you. because he's only a two-drop.
Yeah, two drop.
So you drop him on turn two or coin him out on turn one, and then you're generally playing more than one creature on the turn after, which is going to mean that you're just throwing out one damage.
Yeah.
And tons of it.
Yeah, which is always good fun.
And
hoping that it's hitting the right target.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're sad.
just praise RNGesus. Every time it actually hits, it's worked out pretty well for me.
All right, there you go. You're getting a religious experience along with this deck. All right, so I like these crafting upgrades. I like this deck. What sort of closing advice would you give to someone that wants to try this deck out?
Empty your hand as soon as possible. except against Hunters. Hunters are the only matchup where I've had huge issues, not only with this deck, but also with the completed version, that if anyone wants to message me, I'm more than willing to share my deck lists. But even in that one, you have to understand that Unleash the Hounds is a huge threat with Hunter at any level, because it's a really cheap and easy to get card. And so my advice to anyone playing against Hunter, no matter your deck list, is try to limit your board to three guys.
Yeah, because then you can at least contain the damage that Unleash the Hounds will do.
Yeah, and if they, you know, happen to Buzzard and Unleash the Hounds, at most they get three cards and have to trade those. Generally, they trade those hounds into your guys anyways, so
yeah,
three dudes is a nice little number where you have a effective board and they're not getting very much out of their Buzzard.
Nice. All right, so would you say the Hunter is the hardest matchup that you've faced with this deck?
Yeah, definitely. Mainly because this deck wants to drop everything as soon as possible, and you really have to fight the urge to do that when playing against Hunter.
All right, so what decks is it strongest against? If people are playing with their friends and they see their friend playing X, when should they pick this?
It's really good against Priest, because Priest is more late game, no matter how you build it. It's ridiculously good against Shaman, because if you can prevent a Shaman from having creatures, you win the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had mixed results, but I'll still say it's pretty good against most rogues, because most rogues are playing some variant of the Miracle deck, and so while they're trying to get together their combo, you're hitting them in the face, and they generally don't live enough to actually play that 20/20 Van Cleef on turn 7.
Yeah. Very cool. All right. So let's jump into the Rogue deck, which I put together. I'm super excited about. And of course, just a reminder, the full deck list with cards and links and everything is going to be on the show, so I hope you weren't taking notes that entire time, because it'll all be on gamediplomat.com. You can go there. It'll have download links and all that stuff, so you can get it all there. So if you took notes, good job. You're a good student, but you don't have to take notes on this one. The free Rogue deck. The strategy with rogues is basically to play efficient minions at a slow pace. We're not trying to rush like the warlock is, and just kind of use our removal spells and our weapons to slow down our opponent's aggression. So if I was playing the warlock deck, I'd be using my weapons and removal spells to kill his stuff. Then the goal is to survive to mid and late game where your efficient use of cards will give you the advantage, you need to bully out your opponent. Where you're going to have four or five cards in hands, they'll have one or two. So let's jump right into it. Up front, just a nice removal card, Backstab. It's, again, a zero cast, right? It's dealing two damage instead of four, like the Warlock Soulfire, and this one has to be to an undamaged minion. But there's no downside. You don't have to discard, don't have to do anything.
I would like to say, I think the fact that the minion has to be undamaged is a huge downside, because I cannot tell you how many times I've had a 3-1 that should be a 3-2, and my opponent has to deal with it, but Backstab just can't get there.
Yeah, it's true. It is painful when you top deck, or, you know, when you draw Backstab and the minion's already damaged. A lot of times, you're going to be able to make choices in a good way that makes it okay, where, like, if it's a 3-3, you attack with your 1-1, or sorry, you Backstab and then attack with the 1-1. And don't worry, just like I misspoke there, there will be times when you accidentally do it in the wrong order.
Oh my goodness.
And you just, like, curse this card.
You have no you have no idea how many times I've accidentally Fan of Knives and then oh no, I can't play my Backstab.
Yeah. And then you do the oops emote, and your opponent does the thank you emote, and then you just rage.
Yeah.
Yeah, this guy is mostly here. I get the best use out of him on to kill the opponent's 3-2s. Whatever they drop on turn two is usually like a Knife Juggler or a Swamp Ooze, that sort of thing. This just kills it without hurting your mana, and then you can drop something else. It gives you really nice tempo to help kind of stabilize the board early on.
It's also a really good combo card for your turn two Defias Ringleader, which everyone will eventually
running. Yeah, that is good. That is definitely one of our first craft. Oh, it's actually the number one crafting goal on here. But in the basic deck,
didn't even look at the show notes. Just called that.
You just knew. We're on the same page. All right. Next card in the set is Deadly Poison. This is just simple, right? Rogues, your hero power is to get a weapon, and Deadly Poison just adds two attack to your weapon, changing it from one to three. And that difference is huge. There's so many cards out there with three health, like Gene was mentioning earlier. The Deadly Poison can remove and surprise remove, where they see your dagger, they go, oh, it's safe to play, you know, whatever, my Northshire Cleric. And then you toss this on and attack, and boom, they're weeping, and you are laughing. The next card is Sap, another good, cheap removal spell. That's kind of a theme of this this deck. Just return an enemy minion to your opponent's hand. And so, every now and then, early on, you aren't always sure if this is a good move, right? Because they have a big minion, you throw it back to your hand, they're just going to play it next turn, right? But the big thing is, kind of similar to what Gene was talking earlier about having them waste their turns casting their hero power, if it's an expensive minion, like a Chilwin Yeti on turn 4, they're going to have to waste their turn 5 spending all of their mana on that same thing again.
Yeah, Sap is definitely a huge tempo play for exactly that reason. Opponent plays all of their mana into one creature, and then next turn they play all of their mana but one into playing that creature.
Yeah, and oh man, it's not as common, but those moments when you, like, they spend a bunch of turns, like, buffing a minion, and then you bounce it back to their hand and all the buffs go away, and it just feels so good. And of course, it's also great late game, too. If they drop a taunt minion and they're low health, you just throw the taunt minion back in their hand and keep punching face to try and close it out.
Actually, more than happy to once sap my friend's Alex Draza while I was first playing Miracle Rogue.
Yeah, because you're like, doesn't matter what your health is anyways.
Pretty much.
Nice. All right, so next one is just a generic minion, River Crocolis. He's a 2/3. For two mana. He's fine. He's nothing great. I don't really like many of the two drops for this deck. 2/3 is good because we just want to stay alive against aggro. So the theory with this is you'll be able to trade against two cheap minions with him. Fan of Knives, which Gene mentioned earlier. So keep this in mind when you're comboing with Backstab. Deals one damage to all enemy minions, draws a card. It's fine. It's another cheap removal to prevent aggro decks. And it replaces itself with draw cards, which is great. Shadowed Sun Cleric, just like above, it's just a great, solid card. Silverback Patriarch, another anti-aggro card, which you're noticing here, because this is a control deck, right? And so control decks tend to lose to aggro decks. And so we'd like a lot of ways to try and keep them in check. Silverback Patriarch is a 1/4 taunt for 3. He's there just to eat up all those delicious Murlocs that Gene is throwing down with his Warlock deck.
Eat up
over
all
there.
Of my sad little X1s.
Yeah. But you will notice, so remember when we were talking about earlier about how the Voidwalker is such a good card?
Yes.
So the Voidwalker was a 1/3 for taunt for 1 mana. This is a 1/4 taunt, just 1 health more, but it's 3 mana.
That 2 extra mana is what kills Voidwalker in every Warlock deck. You just cannot run Silverback for 2 extra mana. It's just...
Yeah. It's so painful. Like, and it's like, this is a fine card on its own, but once you seed Voidwalker, you're just not satisfied with it.
There are actually a lot of taunt creatures that have gotten a little more popular recently, the Shield Bear, one of your mm-hmm. former card of the weeks, mm-hmm. the 0/4 for 1 mana, that's actually seeing a lot more play. People used to think it's bad. Now they're like, ooh, aggro has to waste 2 turns or 2 attacks getting into this. But yeah. Like the Silverback Patriarch just hasn't seen that, ooh, I'm good against aggro, because it's just too expensive. And it's really unfortunate.
I have seen it in some Hunter decks, because it is a beast, so there's a little synergy there, so you get a little more for the cost.
Okay, with your Houndmaster.
Yeah. But it's still not amazing. But alright, other card, Chillwind Yeti. Again, same old, just a great value card. And actually in this deck, I mean, this is funny, I didn't even think about this when you mentioned it, Gene. We're running Gnomish Inventor.
Excellent.
Yeah, so like Gene was saying, aggro decks prefer engineer, what is it called?
Novice Engineer.
Novice Engineer, and you know, when we're trying to move more towards mid-range and control like this one, we want the Gnomish Inventor. So it's the 2/4 for 4 that replaces itself. So again, this is playing into the strategy where we're playing a lot of cards that are trying to remove 1 or 2 enemies and replace itself. So like Fan and Knives, this card, because we want to keep ourselves alive, but the goal is to gain card advantage, where we're having more cards in their hands than they are. And Senjin Shieldmaster, again, Tazdingo, shows up just as another great taunt minion.
And just to expand a little bit in this deck, mm-hmm. it's actually... like, it's your ideal card against mid-range and aggro decks, where mid-range you shouldn't have as big of an issue, but, like, the 5 health on this 3 damage guy means that against most aggro decks, you're actually going to take out any of their dudes, and generally trade at least 2 for 1.
Yeah. Awesome. Alright, so, there you go. It's even better than I thought when I picked it. the next card, we're getting some weapons in. Rogues are killers, and we're getting an Assassin's Blade. This is a 5-mana weapon, but you get a 3/4, which means you get to attack 4 times for 3 damage, or if you've got Deadly Poison, you can attack 4 times for 6 damage, or 4 times for 9 damage. What?
Yeah, I've actually seen that dream play.
Oh, you have?
The best way that I've ever seen it was someone turned 7 Assassin Blade, made the 9/4, got 3 attacks to the face, and then Blade flurried and just like, destroyed my board, and then also killed me. And it was because like I think I played double Feral Spirit and dropped mm-hmm. the 4/2/3 wolves with taunt, and I'm like, huh,
you're
can't
feeling so
get past
safe.
This. And then he just Blade Flurries me for 9 damage.
Oh, that is brutal. Blade Flurry is also one of the cards we're going to be constructing, so we'll talk about that one in a little bit. Let's see, so that's good. Assassin's Blade, even without the Deadly Poison, right? Deadly Poison just to perk it. Still, it's 12 damage for 5 mana. Yeah, it spends it over turns. Pray they don't have an Acidic Ooze. But it's good. All right, Darkscale Healer. This slot was a little hard for me to fill, so I'm curious what you think about this one. I just have one of them. Everything else so far has been 2 cards. I have 1 Darkscale Healer. It's a 5-cost, 4/5 minion. Battlecry, restore 2 health to all friendly characters. What do you think?
I think Darkscale Healer is a very undervalued card. For no one's playing it at, obviously, the very high levels, because in its slot you can have an Earthen Ring Farseer, which is a 3-3 for 3 that heals a single target for 3 health, which in most cases is all you need. But at the free-to-play level, Darkscale Healer is amazing because the meta is still very aggro heavy, and so if their little dinky dudes don't have enough power to kill your guys, then you can get huge value out of placing a 4-5 that just heals them all back up to full health. It's basically a creature that gives you the Priest's Holy Nova, except you don't get to do the 2 damage to their guys, unfortunately.
Yeah. Still, yeah, it's great. Yeah, especially because with stuff like Senjin Shieldmaster, Gnomish Adventure, Chilwin Yeti, Silverback Patriarch, we were talking about how we want to trade those against 2 minions. So if you trade against 1 minion, they're all damaged but still alive, then you drop this down, boom, they're back at full health. That's a decent front line again. So, all right, next card, again, Boulder Fist Ogre, because he has such good stats for his cost, as he says in his flavor text.
That we just figured out about.
Yeah, that we just figured out about. I love that. I love finding flavor text like that. It's just so funny. Next one, Reckless Rocketeer. Got 2 copies of this as well. This is kind of the late game drop for this deck. And I don't know, I really like it. It feels a little counterintuitive in the deck, but it's a 6 cost, 5-2 with charge. A lot of times, I find that once this gets late game, Boulder Fist Ogre there is there as the beef, right? He's just there just to fight and brawl. But a lot of times, especially kind of playing at the lower levels with these free decks, getting an extra 5 damage in surprise is really valuable. Players just aren't expecting it.
With the direction you're trying to take this deck, I'm actually really surprised that the Reckless Rocketeer isn't a Stormwind Knight, which is 1 mana less for swapping the stats. It's a 2-5 instead of a 5-2. But at the same time, I'm pleasantly surprised to see it there, because you're not going to run against an aggro deck every single time. And so having the 5 damage person to be treated as a removal spell to take out your opponent control, like your opponent drops down that Senjin Shieldmaster and you drop down your Reckless Rocketeer and they thought they were safe and you're just kind of like, no, you're not.
Yeah, it works really well, and I honestly this may not be a good card choice. I've had good luck with it so far, mostly against kind of like what you were saying there, like against mid-range or other control decks where they are slow, and I like having that little burst of speed at the end. But yeah, this is the card that I'm not too sure about. We are definitely going to replace it in the construction below. Or do we? Oh, I didn't replace it in the construction below. Bam! We're staying with the Reckless Rocketeer, buddy. So what would you? So you, if somebody isn't on board with my choice here, you think the Stormwind Knight is the, or not Stormwind Knight? What is it called?
Stormwind Knight. You are correct.
Yeah, Stormwind Knight. You think that's the other 5 drop to put in there?
Well, actually, it's a 4 drop.
Oh, 4 drop.
And
even better.
I think that add a 4 drop. And with the swap stats, I think it's significantly better than the 6 drop with the 5. I think the 4 drop 2-5 is a lot better than the 6 drop 5-2, because there are a lot more situations, where, in my opinion at least, where you're going to get more value out of the 5 health and 2 damage. Because a lot of times Reckless Rocketeer trades 1-for-1. Where Stormwind Knight almost always trades up instead of trading even.
Nice. All right, cool. Well, there you go. There's another good option. The Stormwind Knight is also a free card, so you can try out both of them without having to craft anything. The last card in this deck is basically there just to deal with other control decks when it gets late game. It's Sprint, 7 mana, draw 4 cards. You only want 1 copy of this in your deck, because you do not want to be drawing this all the time, because... It's a big tempo kill. But sometimes if you're playing another card advantage deck, you just have to, you need that there.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. I actually think that in any free-to-play rogue deck, you need at least one sprint before you get off the ground with your crafting, just because there aren't really a lot of good draw options for the free rogue. And four cards for 7 mana, most of the time you're pretty happy paying 2 mana for every card that you draw, so you're actually getting a one mana discount. Buy 4 cards, get 1 at 50% off.
All right, I like that. That's a good way to look at it. They're having a closing sale right now, helping you out. Awesome. All right, let's look at some of the crafting goals. Defias Ringleader, we talked about him. This is just one of those cards that every rogue is playing, because it's just like a dream turn 2 play, or turn 1 with the coin.
Yes.
Excuse me. So he's Defias Ringleader, 2 mana, 2/2, already passes the vanilla test right there, but combo, which is if you've played another card before you play this card, also summon a 2/1 Defias Bind it. And the beauty of this card isn't da-da-da, whatever, blah-blah-blah. When you get coin, you drop this on turn 1, and you have a 2/2 and a 2/1, and your opponent just is very sad.
I actually want to tell you how much I love this card by telling you the last time I did a arena for Rogue, I got offered 5 Defias Ringleaders and took all 5 of them.
But were you happy with that choice when you started playing?
I went 8-3 with that deck, so I was more than happy, because I cannot tell you how many times in that arena run I had an opening hand of 2 cards, 2 Defias Ringleaders, and a coin, and just turn 3 I'm dropping 2 Defias Ringleaders and getting 2 2/2s and 2 2/1s, and my opponent is just looking at my board and saying, well, now what?
Yeah, that is brutal. All right, next one we're going to replace. We're getting more kind of roguey dudes in here, which I like, is the SI7 Agent. He is the flying Superman rogue. A 3 cost for a 3/3. Again, passes the vanilla test, but combo, deal 2 damage, which is great. It's just a combo. Delete their Knife Juggler. Delete their Acidic Ooze. Delete their, injured Chillwind Yeti. It just works so well.
There's so many times when you get to backstab one dude, play SI7 Agent, and kill another dude, at which point your SI7 Agent has basically 2-for-2'd, or 1-for-1'd right off the bat, and your opponent is left with a 3/3 to deal with.
Yeah, that is a great combo. So that guy's going to be replacing your Silverback Patriarch, because he's just Silverback Patriarch. Like we said, he's a little expensive. Defias Ringleader replaces your River Crocolis because he's boring and a crocodile, and he is not roguish enough
for
us.
Get Renekton out of here.
Yeah, seriously, he does not belong. Up next, Blade Flurry, the card Gene was talking about. It's 2 mana. Destroy your weapon and deal its damage to all enemies. This is one of those cards that I think is a little misleading, kind of like Soulfire. Early on, I wasn't sure if I liked this ability. Because it seems very reliant, right? Because a lot of times you're only going to have a 1 damage weapon. But man, when it works, this card works. So a lot of times with Deadly Poison in there, you're usually going to be able to do 3 damage with this. So the trick with this, obviously, is you attack with your weapon until it only has 1 durability left. And then suddenly you get a huge AoE spell, which is something that Rogue is desperately missing.
Also, another great thing to note about Blade Flurry that most people, most experienced players are going to know about, but most unexperienced players are going to completely glaze over because it's not extremely clear in the card text. You're not running any of them, but there are plenty of creatures that say +1 spell power, and those do boost the power of Blade Flurry.
Oh, nice. So there you go.
Have
so, yeah, because there's
a weapon and happen to have, like, the Ogre Magi or something like that, then it will do 4 damage.
Okay, that's awesome. I actually didn't know that.
Sharing the knowledge.
So, see, you're throwing down knowledge again, helping me out. Yeah, that's really cool, because there's no number on the card, because most of the time, the number on the card will change and highlight to let you know, hey, this upgraded.
Yep.
So that's awesome. So that's going to replace Fan of Knives, because while it doesn't give you the card draw, deals a lot more damage, has a lot more kind of versatility, and I think it's worth the trade-off there. And then, also, so we're putting in one Blade Flurry, because we don't want to destroy all of our weapons. And then the other card we're going to put in for the second Fan of Knives card is Eviscerate. And this is just another great card. It's 2 mana, deal 2 damage, combo, deal 4 damage instead. You're almost never dealing 2 damage with it, unless you're really desperate. It's usually 4 damage, which is just great removal. And if you're, for whatever reason, if you're in the position to go aggro, it's another 4 damage right on the face that they weren't expecting. Alright, and then another one, Defender of Argus. This is just another kind of solid card. 4 mana, 2/3, Battlecry, give adjacent minions +1/+1, and taunt. This is replacing Gnomish Inventor, and it's just another kind of like defensive barrier as we're building up our card advantage to win late game.
I do like this card a lot because it is a very good anti-aggro card. I haven't built your deck, so I haven't looked at the mana curve, but I really like Sun Fury Protector in its slot, in Defender of Argus's slot, in a lot of decks. There are a lot of control decks that are too top-heavy, and so Sun Fury Protector, it's 2 less mana, but you don't get the +1/+1, and in a lot of control decks, it is the better card. I'm not 100% certain in this deck.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, so there you go. There's another good option. This mana curve is... So, from 0 forward, it's 2-2, 5-6, 5-6-4. So, 4 cost is at 5. So, you could dip that down to 4. We could also obviously make other swaps around 2 to make it work. But that's another good option there. So, this is a card I love. I love so much. I want to play it in every deck, even though it doesn't always make sense to.
It's
the Azure Drake.
Azure Drake is an amazing card, and it's actually, I missed that when I was saying that you're not running any plus spell power.
I hit it down here in the crafting section. This is a 5 mana 4/4 with spell damage +1, so that's going to boost your Blade Flurry damage, and also your Eviscerate. Is that the only one? Oh, and Backstab damage as well. And then it has Battlecry draw card. So once again, I mean, it's just fitting into that. It's replacing itself, and you get a huge minion to go along with that replacement.
No, you are absolutely correct. There, other than aggro decks, I think every mid-range deck and every control deck should definitely run this card. I think aggro decks have better options. But
yeah.
No, this card definitely has a spot in most decks.
Yeah. And this is a card that I've only recently started to see get played more. This next one, Spiteful Smith. And he's actually he's a decent body, right? He's a 5 mana 4/6, which trades excellently. 6 health is just huge. And then he has Enrage. Your weapon has +2 attack. So obviously the rogue can always have a weapon in hand. Even if you don't have the Assassin's Blade in your deck, your hero power gets it to you. I mean, if you start combining Deadly Poison on there and then Blade Flurry, you're just dealing huge amounts of damage with that weapon. I went ahead and replaced Sprint with this guy.
And I think that... Your show notes have it as a 2x replace for a 1x card.
Oh. I would probably replace the Darkscale Healer, maybe, as well.
Oh, yeah, I believe that's your other 1x card. Yeah. So
let's make it that way.
But yes, this card is absolutely wonderful in assassin or in rogue decks because I almost called it an assassin deck. But because at 6 health, there are very few times where it won't trade up in creature value, and when it doesn't trade up, where they see that creature and say, oh my goodness, I have to kill that now, or they're just not able to kill it now. There's very little time where it's not at some point enraged, giving you the 3-2 dagger or the 5-4 assassin's blade.
Yeah, that gets scary real quickly. Awesome. So, all right, so that's the deck. Again, these will all be on GameDiplomat.com. So you get two flavors this week. If you're feeling more aggressive, go for the Warlock deck. If you're feeling a little more methodical, want to take your time, check out our Rogue deck. And, of course, we've kind of brought up on the show, Gina suggested some changes. If you have ideas about what cards you'd swap out or kind of what you would make your first crafting goals, let us know. We'll share it with the community, of course. Put it in the show notes. Don't put it in the show notes because you don't have access to the show notes. Put them on the blog, GameDiplomat.com, or in our Google Plus community. We'll talk about it all there. So let's jump into, speaking of the community, I kind of killed that transition, but...
transition.
Perfect. Save your voice. You're gonna need your singing soon enough. But for now, the question. Zach Hedman says, he writes in and says, right now there are a lot of aggro decks in the game, with this Murloc deck, Reynad Zoo deck, and even Dan's Beastmaster deck all dominating the game, which we've talked about on this show as well. Do you think Blizzard would like the playstyle to be closer to 50-50 with control and aggro decks? And if so, do you think they will go so far as to nerf a few cards to make it that way? Because it seems like aggro decks have dominated Hearthstone for about a month now. What do you think, Gene?
I think that it's very difficult for them to nerf cards now that the game is out of beta, because mm-hmm. when you're in beta, it's very excusable to say, oh, mind control at 8 mana is a little too strong, let's make that 10. Where, on the other hand, when you're outside of beta, it's a little more frowned upon to say, hey, this card is a little bit too strong, let's give it some small tweaks. It's kind of expected, but that by the time you're out of beta, all the cards that were in beta are where you want them, or any cards that you put out are significantly tested, and you believe that they're balanced. And,
And you talked about earlier on the show kind of how the cycle goes, yeah. Right? So this is just kind of expected in card games.
It's been my experience that it is that way. I kind of am disappointed in the question, because I believe what Blizzard would like would be closer to a 33-33-33 with control, aggro, and midrange. Kind of glazing mm-hmm. over midrange altogether kind of breaks the cycle and is what makes aggro a little too strong right now. A lot of people are mm-hmm. only thinking about the meta as being either control or aggro, and so a lot of the people are kind of glazing over the fact that midrange is there, and without midrange there's nothing to counter aggro, and so aggro will remain dominant.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's kind of expected, right? And early in a game's life cycle, because Magic was around for decades now at this point, and it didn't have the perfect balance right away, because it's not just that the game needs to mature, because the game does need to mature. Having more cards and stuff gives more options, but the community is still trying to learn how to balance itself, because we have all the tools in our disposal. If you look at just kind of the way that decks rise and fall in popularity, like Warlock, Murloc, and then suddenly Control Warrior is being a big deal right now. This sort of stuff comes and goes, and it's not because Blizzard is changing anything. We're just kind of learning new ways to play cards and counter whatever's popular.
Yeah, there are actually a lot of instances, if you watch a lot of the constructed Hearthstone live streamers, where a streamer will be going along playing, say, an aggro deck, and they'll just see way too many mid-range decks, and all of a sudden they'll just be like, you know what, here, let me build a control deck because I'm seeing a lot of mid-range. Or they'll be playing mid-range and see a lot of control and say, hey, let me build an aggro deck real quick. And a lot of people are probably seeing the dominance of aggro because they're only having the one deck list. I think it'd be healthy for everyone to build a control, at least one control, at least one mid-range, at least one aggro. I think if we had that, we'd see a lot less of the to put it nicely, complaining about aggro, and a lot more people actually climbing out of the, say, 18 to 15 range.
So there you go. Gene doing his best Smokey the Bear impression. Only you can prevent the success of aggro decks. Go out and build a mid-range deck right now. So I agree. I don't think we're going to see many nerfs. I just don't think that's something that Blizzard wants to do. I don't think that's something really the community wants either. We don't want Blizzard constantly changing cards as we're playing with them. Instead, I think they're going to look at stuff like adding cards with the Knack set. So we know we're getting, was it 20 or 30 cards?
I actually haven't into the Knack set all that much. Confession.
That is all right. You got plenty of time. So we know we're getting, it's either 20 or 30, we're getting a big chunk of cards that are just going to be thrown into the pool that we can play with the existing cards. I think what they're going to do, if they even think that a balance needs to be hit, if they want to encourage more mid-range decks, for example, they'll add cards in that set that, you know, make people think, oh, this would be cool. I'll try this. And it leads them into do a mid-range deck. I think that's the way they'll approach those sort of balance issues. All right, let's jump into the review. You guys are testing me with these names. What is this? This is just like a series of consonants.
I'm going to take a shot here for you.
All right.
Draw-dar-dan-go-to.
All right, I'm going to accept it because I don't want to try and do it any better because I'll just be worse. He says, great podcast. I'm just calling him Drad for short. Drad says, great podcast. Says, good job so far on the podcast. Can't wait for both this game and another episode. Smiley face. That was from May of last year. I finally... So I'm going through the iTunes store and picking different regions because I just found out how to switch regions in iTunes. So this week's are from Canada. So we got that old one, but also a new one, which is there was a whole year between reviews there. JTex VFX said... informative and fun. Josh Augustine's Happy Hearthstone podcast hits the right combination of being fun and informative. It's lighthearted and very approachable to new players, while also including some interesting perspectives from guest hosts like Gene. What? He's psychic. He said it. Of varying skill levels. The deck battles are really entertaining, as much fun as hearing a conversation between two very excited friends around the water cooler. Thank you for your contributions to the community. I appreciate and look forward to each episode. Thank you guys for your reviews. JTech VFX is not actually psychic. I threw that in there. But wouldn't that have been cool? It would have been even better if it was like the May 2013 review, right? It's just like, and Gene, great job in April.
I'm
and
he was not like, entirely what? Sure I was listening to your podcast at that time.
Well,
I learned about this podcast because I was watching or I was listening to Threshold the Hex podcast.
Oh, nice.
Here. And
good man.
I believe you guys were like 7 or 8 episodes into that one by the time I had heard of this one.
Yeah. Yeah, and that one definitely started after this one. So, all right. We have a long-standing tradition here, Gene, of you singing for our amusement. So, and you being whoever the guest host is. So, we are entering that special part of the show. Take it away.
Okay, well, I'm not going to lie. I'm plagiarizing this tune because, like you've said on multiple occasions, it's actually been stuck in my head, and I'll just find myself sitting at my desk at work humming it.
I think I know what song this is going to be.
Card of the week. Here it is. It's the card of the week.
So good. I love it. It is in your head, right? You can't get it out.
Oh my goodness. I cannot tell you how many times I'm sitting at my desk. I'm thinking about idea about Hearthstone comes to my head. I look up a card. I'm sitting there looking at it, and I just start humming to myself. And then I just have to yell at myself and be like, no, stop that.
Don't be happy. Alright, so the card this week is Harrison Jones. He is a 5-mana neutral minion, legendary. He's 5 damage, 4 health, and battle cry, destroy enemy weapon cards. Destroy enemy weapon and draw cards equal to its durability. What do you think? You picked this card out, so I want to hear what your thoughts are.
I picked this card out because it has been one of my favorite legendaries to get in the arena, even outside of the arena with the emergence of last week's barbarian warrior and just warrior in general. As well as the fact that Shaman runs a good number of weapons, and Rogue runs a good number of weapons, and Paladin really only has the two weapons, but they're both really strong. I think this card is just beautiful in most of those decks, because there are so many classes with weapons that you almost always get to use his Battle Cry, and when you don't get to use his Battle Cry, he's still a 5/4 for 5 mana, which isn't that bad. It doesn't quite pass the vanilla test, but it's almost there.
Yeah, it's close. I have to admit, I think on at least one occasion I have slandered this card on this podcast. I think I put him up there with Captain Greenskin as kind of the two legendaries I didn't like. But I agree, especially now with how popular weapons are. And just, I mean, some of those, like, some of the weapons have really high durability that you're running into. I mean, if you're destroying that weapon, if you were just destroying the weapon, it's a good card. And if you were just drawing the cards, it's a good card. But the fact that you're doing both on top of getting the decent body, right? He's not terrible. Yeah, when he's good, he's really, really, really good. I don't think he reaches that potential all the time. But when he does, it's worth it,
oh,
right?
Oh, I think even if you're only getting one card off of him, back to my earlier statement about one card is about two mana. It's what you're willing to pay. Yeah. He's only one health off of the vanilla test. And if you kill a one durability, so they play True Silver Champion, and they use one charge, now it only has one charge left, you're still getting two mana worth, which makes up for him not passing the vanilla test.
Yeah, I agree. If he draws any cards, he is absolutely worth it. I think there's still a lot of times, because there are classes that have no weapons.
Which generally
so a lot of times you have
sad.
No hope. Yeah. But yeah, I agree. He's a fun card. I don't know if I've ever actually used him. Because a lot of times when you get the legendary option in Arena, right? It's like, I'm always kind of happy if it's something like Harrison Jones, because I'm like, oh, it just makes my choice easier. I can choose between the other two. But yeah, I'll have to give him a shot. I'll have to give him a shot. He does. I agree. His potential is insane.
Actually, I think the only time I haven't taken Harrison Jones in Arena was when I had an Assassin deck, and I got offered Hogger, which is just ridiculous tempo.
Oh, yeah. You can't turn that down. All right, so I gotta ask, because you mentioned earlier not playing WoW. Do you know anything about Harrison Jones in WoW? Because he's like a recurring character there.
I don't know about him in the lore, but I did look him up on the WoW wiki, and I know that he's an archaeology instructor in one of the towns.
Yeah, he is. And he basically shows up in a lot of the raids that are like troll ruins, and he shows up and he usually does something dumb that causes something bad to happen. But he's kind of the goofy character. Yeah, exactly. The goofy Indiana Jones parody, of course. All right. So that is our episode. Again, we're going to have full show notes along with the full card list for both the decks we talked about, links to all the cards you can upgrade, and you can look up all there, how much it costs to craft them and all that stuff, all on the blog, gamediplomat.com. Just swing by there, click on Hearthstone at the top. You'll be good. Next week on this show, we got Scott Lance coming back for the next episode. I think he's so far, and Gene, it may change after your episode. I don't want to make you feel bad.
Oh, not at all. He's an amazing co-host.
Yeah, I think he's the most requested guest host we've had so far. He hosted our big How to Win Arena episode a while back that everyone really seemed to like. So we're bringing him back next week to talk about card evaluation skills. And this is really fun. He pitched this idea. He's been working on it for several weeks in the doc already. How to look at a card and know right away whether it's a good or bad pick for you. All the different ways to evaluate a card's value. I'm really excited about it. Scott clearly knows his stuff. And I think I'm going to be learning a lot next episode too. So I hope you come back for it. And Gene, I hope you listen to it too,
no,
buddy.
Since
you're here,
will.
I'm just going to tell it to you. All right, good man. And on other shows, On my WoW Pet Battle crew, just throw it out there real fast, we reviewed our tanky pet team, including the Ruby Droplet, which is, I declare, the best pet we've ever found on the show. So if you care about WoW at all, unlike Gene, just, you know, don't pay attention for the next 10 seconds. If you care about WoW at all, pet battling is awesome. You should listen to this episode and get the Ruby Droplet pet, because it's amazing. All right. As always, though, we'd love to know what you thought about this show or any other shows, if you listen to those as well, what you'd like to see added in future episodes. You can contact me directly on Twitter, as always, @JAugustine, or you can email me, ajosh@outlook.com. And Jin, where can people find you?
I can actually be found almost anywhere on the internet under the pseudonym Gene Jubei. That's my Twitter, pretty much everything. My live stream is twitch.tv/GeneJubei.
Cool. So yeah, so for people that don't know, that is JINJUBEI. We'll put links in the show notes as well, so you can look it up there. But yeah, and of course you can always leave a comment on the blog while you're there checking out Gene's name. And you can join our Google Plus community, where we're talking about Hearthstone all day every day. Just go to Google Plus, search for Happy Hearthstone, you will find us. Phew. Gene, thanks for coming on this episode.
I'm so glad to have been here. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was really fun. And you keep working on your Miracle Mage deck, and we'll have you back on for a deck battle once it's perfected and ready to dominate.
Sounds good.
Cool. So, Gene, thank you. And thanks to everyone that came by, listened to the show. Thanks for visiting the Happy Hearthstone and having a little fun with us. We'll see you next time.